Keeping It Brief is a discussion show centered around current events of questionable importance. While the guys occasionally sound like they know what they're talking about, nothing they say should be considered fact. Also, the show deals with adult themes and includes adult language. If you can't handle that, well, get the fuck out.
I think I'll put on Wu-Tang Enter the Seven Chambers, and I'm just going to watch all of these to Wu-Tang. You know, Derek, I just like to set myself up for success. What can I say?
They can deconstruct my porn habits all they want, but I don't know if they're going to get too far.
What do you think Angela Merkel's porn habits are?
Optimus Prime gets infinity miles to the gallon. All right, we're going to do this, and we're going to do it fucking big. You guys ready?
I'm in.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the long-awaited return of Keeping It Brief, the long-form podcast where the quaint triumvirate discusses a variety of topics, and just right into it. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. Don't call it a comeback.
It's a never went.
That's right. We were always here. We just didn't record for a bit.
Those other two voices are the one and only DJS, Derek Schiffenauer, as well as the one and only KO, Kevin Osman. This voice is Christian Edwards, creator of The Morning Brief, co-host of this wonderful podcast, as well as hopefully efficient moderator over the next little while as we discuss some of the more interesting and uplifting topics that are currently going on in the world. If you are looking for information on any of the more sad things, you can find that all kinds of other places. So please take your sadness elsewhere. Fair?
I think that's very fair.
Just fun stuff here. That's what we do.
Just real quick, how's life, gentlemen? Anything crazy going on?
You know, just enjoying summer out here. San Francisco's actually had some nice weather for a bit, so it's pretty good. And work's been slow, so I've had no problems the last couple months here.
It's great to hear. D-Rock?
Things have been good here as well. I've been back in town in San Francisco for an extended period after, you know, my 8-month exile to the frozen north. So it's kind of nice to be back in San Francisco. Work has been busy, but not necessarily in a bad way. Just keeping me very, very busy on a project in town.
And by the frozen north, you don't mean like the Yukon, you mean Seattle.
Right? Yes. I mean Seattle, not the Yukon, not north of the wall of Westeros.
having been in Seattle, I can tell you that it is anything but frozen.
Is that right?
Yes. I'm currently in Portland, and it's the coolest week that I've had over the last three I've been here, and it's been a solid 80 to 85 the whole time. We were hitting hundos, and up in Seattle this past weekend, it was, you know, about 85 to 90. It was wonderful.
That sounds just wonderful. About right for right when I decided to make my exit. Perfect timing on
absolutely.
My part.
Absolutely. Rundown?
Rundown.
A real quick summer movie recap. T-Swift, all kinds of crazy stuff. Monet Davis, our girl, handling business in the Little League World Series. Steve Ballmer, losing his mind in Los Angeles. And a brief tribute to the one and only Robin Williams.
Chica, yeah.
So earlier this summer, we did a pretty extensive conversation about movies that we were really looking forward to seeing. And now, somehow, the entire summer seems to have passed, and we are getting into fall movie season. But before all that happens, we want to talk about some of our favorite shows that we took some time out to see over the past couple months. Kayo, were there any movies in particular that struck your fancy?
Well, this one's from early summertime, but I did thoroughly enjoy the movie Neighbors with Zac Efron and Seth Rogen, the lovable schlubby husband versus like the toned fraternity guy. The movie was pretty entertaining. One of the hit a little too close to home with some of the fraternity activities that were going on, but I found it to be very funny, and there weren't a ton of like pure comedies that were around this summer that I enjoyed at all, and so I that one definitely sticks out as one that I kind of performed above the bar, so to speak.
Now,
fair enough.
How toned was Zac Efron?
Quite toned. I think, is the, okay, the appropriate amount of tone he had going on there.
Well, then I'll have
was
to check it out.
Enough to get beat up by a bum on Skid Row at 2 o'clock in the morning when he wasn't buying crack.
I thought that he was the one who beat the bum up in that scenario, but It would look pretty bad if he got beat up. But at the very end of the movie, spoiler alert, not really necessary, they have a scene where Zac Efron and Seth Rogen are both standing with their shirts off. And so you really kind of get the visual seared into your mind right there about what the story they're trying to tell. So they don't let that escape anybody.
A stark contrast.
Yeah, very stark.
Nice. How about you, Christian? Was there a movie that you particularly enjoyed?
Yeah. I mean, one of the big things that I enjoy is when movies live up to my expectations.
Yeah.
And as previously discussed, pretty high expectations for the new Planet of the Apes film that came out.
I believe
The Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
The Dawn.
This is The Dawn.
Which I had a huge problem with, by the way. The order of the movies is backwards.
But the problem is that the name of the first one, like they needed to have some kind of good, like, thrusting name. They had to have like a good verb right there. And so it's to get people excited. But the movie ends at a dawn time. So I feel like it's an appropriate, I feel like they made it okay.
That's fair.
Okay.
That's
fair. Well, we're going to just go ahead and move past that plot consistency.
That's the only thing wrong with the movie.
Other than that, it's 2 hours and 10 minutes of perfect filmmaking. Especially when the monkey is riding the horse with two AK-47s through the fire. That was just, you know, just everything that you could possibly ask for from your summer blockbuster. Yeah, so I enjoyed that. I thought it was actually like relatively human, which, you know, kind of kept in line with the first one. But I definitely thought it built on the first one. And I think Caesar is a pretty solid character. Like, I have a lot of respect for what those guys did. The movie looked wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's always nice to see your hometown get blown to shit. So anytime I can get in on that, I'm a big fan. Derek, did you have a film that struck your fancy?
There was one that stood out above the rest. I saw a couple movies that I really enjoyed, but one that I actually saw with you two, which I loved, was the new Marvel flick,
Ooh, child.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Things are gonna get easier.
And not only did it have the best soundtrack of the summer, which we can talk about briefly a little bit later, but that movie was the closest a movie has made me feel like Star Wars made me feel. It's just fun. It has heart and keeps you glued to your seat for a little north of 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to imagine that like a creature with like three words of vocabulary like packs the strongest emotional punch in an entire 2.5 hour like action spectacle. But they did a really good job, I think, in that movie of kind of combining all the different elements, and especially going away from the darker, more serious themes that a lot of superhero movies have really clung to since kind of Batman Begins really kind of kicked that off the last decade.
Yeah. Vin Diesel was able to emote the shit out of that animated tree with four words uttered the whole movie, and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I do think there was like a little bit of an overreaction to that. Like, let's be for real a little bit. I mean, I read something that was saying there should be acting Oscars given out for CGI things, and that like Groot versus Caesar was a legitimate thing. And like, you know, one movie was more, you know, funny, enjoyable. I think that would be the Guardians of the Galaxy.
For sure.
But let's kind of take that back. Speaking of the soundtrack, one of the big takeaways from this movie that had nothing at all to do with anything was that the awesome mixtape Volume 1 that is featured prominently in the film rose to the top of the iTunes charts.
That's right.
It was awesome. Mixtape was an awesome mixtape. The director is getting a lot of credit for picking out such a really good kind of set of songs. And it's interesting because I was reading some article where they were talking to him about specifically about the musical choices. And a lot of the songs, it's like you can't say the name of them necessarily, or you don't know who the artist is,
right,
but they're songs that everybody knows and identifies with still.
Totally.
And so that was what unique is he really did a good job of picking not overly obvious songs, but still ones that everybody knew in the back of their mind,
sure,
and kind of it's just like, I would love to listen to that song. It's just, I haven't thought about that fact that that song exists for, you know, 10 years or since my parents were playing it when I was like driving in the car. So they think they did a really good job of like kind of reintroducing some of that, some of the high quality kind of music from the 70s into to younger, to teenagers today and to 20 somethings today.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can say that having driven 3 hours each way from Portland to Seattle this weekend, I listened to Awesome Mixtape Volume 1 at least once all the way through each way.
That's pretty solid.
It's great. I love it.
Do you have a favorite song off the mixtape?
My favorite one to sing is just the Ooh Child, as previously demonstrated.
Yeah.
But my favorite one is Come and Get Your Love. That's just a catchy tune. Hey. Do you guys have a favorite?
That's my favorite too.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's just like you can't not enjoy that song. But yeah. I'm always gonna like any Jackson 5 song, even though that was a movie ender.
Right.
That's still my favorite song on the track though.
Ooh,
in the movie.
Baby.
Oh yeah. In the movie, there was a few that packed some really. They did a good job of like packing some legitimate like emotional punches with these songs that you've heard 100 times, mm-hmm. but it kind of just hit the right chord every single time.
Totally. Speaking of songs hitting the right chord, there's a songstress amongst us, gentlemen.
Who is that?
Where is she? I don't know, man. Hide your kids. Hide your wife. Because Taylor Swift's singing anybody out here. It's the one and only Taylor Swift. She formerly of the Teardrops and the Guitar. About, I don't know about you, but she's feeling 22.
Mm-hmm.
She released a song yesterday that is an official pop song. Her first official pop song.
Sure.
And in, I don't know, give or take 24 hours, it currently has 9.6 million YouTube views.
Yep. Yep. Trying to get that Miley Cyrus money. What's going on there?
I think Miley Cyrus is trying to get that Taylor Swift money, yeah. I think Taylor Swift might be a little bit more what the people call wholesome, marketable, things like that. And you guys have heard the song. Immediate reactions.
Not the most positive of reactions. It's okay. I have to say I'd prefer Taylor Swift strumming a guitar to... her current style, but I get, you know, she wants to push her artistic bounds as far as they will continue to make her profit insanely, and so that's kind of what she's trying to do here, is get a little push. She kind of gives me a Bruno Mars vibe in the music video when I watched it, and trying to just kind of be much more of a front woman instead of a musician. She's trying to be much more of just like an entertainer.
Oh, I thought you meant that she's petite and kind of cute.
I think she's like 7 inches taller than Bruno Mars. So.
She is. There's like a great picture from the VMAs with the two of them on stage, and she looks like a giant. Derek, reaction? Not the same.
I don't know. I'm not a fan, but I do at the same time fully realize, and I'm resigned to my fate, that I will be humming along to it for the next couple weeks, and then it will probably be stuck in my head for eternity.
Yep. That's the MO. That is the Taylor Swift program.
Yeah.
You know, there's a website that I that you actually linked to in the brief, Christian, so people could learn about the Israel-Palestine situation in an unbiased manner.
That's a good segue.
And an article from that website, the title of the article says, "The problem with her song is that it's a perfect pop song. Just can't be overdone. That's just she made the perfect pop song this time around." So I think a lot of people are kind of like having to hate like it, if anything.
She just like hit it and everything from here is down.
Yeah, like, you know, you're gonna have to listen to this song for the next 6 months. They're probably gonna put it in a shit ton of holiday advertisements, so you better get used to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've never like really listened to old Taylor Swift, I know this sounds absurd because it sounds like I'm talking about like old Green Day or something like that. Go back and listen to like what she wrote when she was like 16 or whatever. Like her original Taylor Swift CD, self-titled debut album.
Yeah.
And that's actually really good shit. And she wrote all of that. So I think it's like important to remember that she is like super talented and this is like a conscious choice, because I feel like there's about to be some pretty hardcore T-Swift bashing and hatred to come. I think we're walking into it pretty face first.
She's great at that teenage angsty kind of love song kind of thing. So yeah, we'll see if she can kind of make that transition. I actually saw T-Swift in concert back when that was her album that she played. And I remember her coming out and playing Lose Yourself, and that kind of turned me off on her pretty quickly. But
That turns you off?
She did not do the greatest job. It was a very soft, melodic version of Lose Yourself. It didn't exactly hit the chords I was hoping.
Well, that's interesting.
I was hoping it would hit.
Interesting.
But
speaking
she's,
of,
she's making moves, you know.
Was she a good performer overall?
She was, she was a good performer. She was like 17 probably when I saw her or something.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even know who she was when I saw her. I was going. I'm sure you can guess why I was at a Taylor Swift concert. But
your mom won tickets on the radio. something that she's not good at apparently is selling scents.
Oh no.
And specifically the colognes and perfumes of the world. And apparently her partner in not being able to sell scents crime is like an actual criminal, Justin fucking Bieber.
America's most wanted.
An actual criminal.
But that's the problem with those two, and that kind of makes sense to me. The only people that would be interested in buying their scents, the teeny bopper set, they don't have any money to throw around. They don't have any disposable income.
Well, no, I think.
Well, actually, back in 2011, Justin Bieber had the number one women's fragrance in U.S. departments.
Oh wow!
And so it's really much. It's really much more of a downfall in terms of the purchasing. The people who would buy it either have it already or aren't interested in buying his perfume anymore. But the holding company of that owns both of these perfumes lost $150 million last quarter and specifically blamed Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift's products for their poor performance.
Oh, man. Okay.
Hey, everybody. The Bieber cologne didn't sell as expected.
So that's when the recession really hit home.
Yeah, it took a little lag time, but it's starting to hit the Bieber Swift perfume category now.
So,
this is the last remnant.
Okay, I have a theory on this. I think that I understand why the Justin Bieber cologne, if it was a cologne, didn't sell. Because I think like people who wear cologne are trying to have other people smell them intimately, right? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes ask what that smell is. And I just don't feel like if it was like, you know, getting to the point with a lady and she was like, oh, God, what is that? And I was just like, that's Justin Bieber. It would really do the trick that I was looking for.
But that could be the ultimate turn on or turn off. Like, you could either completely lock it down or she's going to leave.
You know what would happen if that completely locked it down? I would get the
right
fuck
there.
Out of there.
That's
if I was talking to a girl and she was like,
leave.
Give me that Justin Bieber, I'd be like, you could get the fuck out of here. Maybe it's a good test.
I don't think you would say
the
that.
Justin
that
Bieber
would
doubt your sincerity right now.
That was a lie. That would never. Nope. Mm-mm. I would be like, okay, more Justin Bieber, please. but I think the T Swift must just not have smelled good, right?
I mean, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe. I'm not sure about that.
What went wrong with Taylor Swift? That's a question for the ages.
Do you guys want to know the name of
her
perfume?
I do.
Oh wait, can you do you have the names in front of you?
I do.
Can we guess which one's Taylor Swift and which one's Justin Bieber based solely on the name?
Okay, yeah. I'll give you each of them. Okay, so Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber. Their perfumes are there's three of them, so you can pick which one's going to who. There's
they each have
Someday.
Three?
No, there's three total. There's
Someday.
There is Wonderstruck, and there is Girlfriend.
Okay. Girlfriend has to be
Justin
Bieber.
Girlfriends of Bieber, yeah, that was the gimme.
Someday, and then what was the other one?
Wonderstruck.
Someday is Bieber.
I disagree. Someday is Taylor Swift.
Nope.
Dang
Christian
it!
Got it right. I think Taylor Swift's like youthful innocence and like constant amazement at everything that happens to her. Like Wonderstruck is the perfect kind of name for her perfume, you know, just like encapsulate her whole persona.
Okay,
I'm just gonna go ahead and move on from this to the question that we have set up to end this segment because I think we've spent far too much time. What celebrity scent would you actually wear? D-Rock Schiffenauer, lay it on us.
No question, without a doubt, the scent of Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh, I like that one.
That's a good one.
As soon as that's developed, it's going to print money. Who doesn't want to smell like The Rock?
Would you?
Oh, yeah. What would the name? What would the name of the fragrance be?
Brahma Bull.
All right, I like it. You better send your business plan to him right
now. If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
Oh my God, it's golden.
It writes itself.
It's golden. Oh, KO.
Well, I actually, I would pick the scent of marketed by one Will Smith.
Okay,
and it would be called Fresh Prince. Oh, you don't even have to.
That's good too.
Will Smith's perfume, man, just smells of success. That's all you need to worry about.
I feel like that probably exists, right?
Who knows? I hope it's named Fresh. If it does, I hope it's named Fresh Prince. I really hope so.
Yeah, I mean, I know who mine is and it exists. I don't wear it, but maybe I should. I want to smell like Jay-Z. So apparently I need to go buy the gold cologne. Gold.
That's what it's called, just gold?
Gold. And just...
Gold. Jay-Z gold.
Is it like Goldschlager and has flecks of gold in it?
I don't know. Because they get that weird thing where you have like you have glitter on your face, but you don't know it. You don't really know where it came from. I don't really like that at all. But for non-extant, I think I might wear... I would wear like Steve McQueen cologne. But it would have to be like in a really oaken box and like aged for 30 years. And it would just be called McQueen.
Yeah.
It wouldn't even smell like anything. It's just when you put it on your body, you just know you're ready to go.
Uh-huh.
It has only the faintest of scents because you don't need a scent if you're wearing Steve McQueen's cologne.
Totally. Now, someone who should have their own, probably perfume or perhaps cologne, is one of the stars of this year's Little League World Series thus far, and that is Monet Davis. And she is a girl who's done a couple of just unbelievable things thus far. First off, she has pitched a three-hitter in the Little League World Series, which is a pretty difficult thing for anyone to do, period. It's the highest level of Little League baseball. And she's also going to be the first Little Leaguer on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
That's pretty
Have
awesome.
You guys watched her play at all?
I have. I've seen. I'll admit, I am a sucker for the Little League World Series. Ever since I was in Little League, my team made it to one game before the before the World Series, and I've always enjoyed watching it. And kind
you guys
of
made it to like regionals.
They made it to the final game. I mean, so I wasn't on this team. This is like kids. I was never this good at baseball. This is like the kids that were legitimately good. Like some of them, a few of them are playing pro right now. But they made it to the last game. Where if they won the game, they would have gone to Williamsport, and then they lost the game, and so they didn't go. It was brutal because they just intentionally walked Hank Conger, who's on the Angels right now. He was on the team, and they just intentionally walked our best player every time. It was great. It was some great money ball going on right there, but frustrating to watch for sure. But to bring it back to Monet, I have seen her play a little bit, and it's pretty awesome to watch. I mean, she throws a 70-mile-per-hour fastball.
Yeah.
As a 13-year-old, like that's pretty insane.
I didn't throw 17 miles an hour until I was 15, and I had the advantage of genetics.
Yes, you did.
Seriously, though, I was like a big kid. I think it's unbelievable. I think it's great. Derek, have you caught any of this?
My Little League World Series experience begins and ends with the Danny Almonte Rojas scandal of like 2000.
The black mark on the history.
Yeah, and after that, I just kind of lost heart and tuned out, and I haven't been able to recapture the magic. But glad to hear that she's doing well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's pretty cool to watch. The reason I like it is because there's like so clearly like so much effort and like raw emotion that these kids have no idea how to handle. It's like they're just starting to get hormones. They have no idea what the fuck's going on in their lives, and they're also like playing in front of millions of people. And so it's pretty entertaining stuff to kind of just see how the kids can perform. I mean, another thing that happened, like a little kid, a 4'11" kid, hit a home run the other day. And it was great to watch because the center fielder literally—it's only 200 feet long, the home run distance—but the center fielder literally ran back like 50 feet because they were playing him so far in, and the kid just bombed it right over his head. So there's some cool little, they always have good stories going on during the Little League World Series. So I'm a big fan.
Nice.
Yep. I agree. I enjoy it. I think it's just kind of pure sport. Like, it's still, you know, it's competitive, but it's, you can see that like there's still like a whole lot of sportsmanship, like next level type sportsmanship going on.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of being a kid, because there was a girl that played Little League the same time, like in my age, and she was one of the better players in the league, and she made the All-Star team. I mean, obviously we weren't like Williamsport good, but it just kind of reminds me of how cool something like that could be. And I hope this girl, you know, I just hope this isn't like as good as it gets, you know. I hope that she has a nice future in front of her and whatever she so chooses to follow.
She has said that her dream is to play basketball at University of Kentucky. So Gino Auriemma is on notice now to get this girl in there and sell some tickets. Yep. Oh, did I say Kentucky?
You did. But it's okay. Gino Auriemma and John Calipari are basically the same person. Okay. So one last little thing on the subject of basketball, and that is Steve Ballmer was announced as the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers. And if you have not seen the video, this is just a brief snippet of this man just absolutely losing his mind.
We're going to be hardcore. 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 We're going to get better every day. We're going to be tenacious. Something knocks us down, we're going to get back up, and we're going to keep coming and coming and coming and coming and coming. Did you watch these guys? That was hardcore! Hardcore, baby! Nothing gets in our way. Boom! Keep coming! Hardcore! The Hardcore Clippers! That's us!
Yeah, so Steve Ballmer is ecstatic to be the owner of the Clippers. Kale, do you think this is like the biggest 0-60 that those Clippers fans had ever imagined? Like, basically, non-extant Donald Sterling to Chris Farley from SNL.
Chris Farley would like money falling out of his pockets, instead of drugs falling out of his pockets. They did a good job there. I can't imagine a sports franchise having such a distinct turnaround in a positive sense like this. It's just so crazy, like from April to now, how insane it's been, and especially for people who have been consistently supporting the Clippers financially and rooting for them in any way, you have to be pretty happy about how this has gone. I mean, he might have a little intensity, but it's like, it's glad to see somebody like actually care and be willing to spend money versus somebody who's just like a ruthless businessman that doesn't give a fuck about anybody else.
Totally. Fun fact about Steve Ballmer: he was our graduation speaker.
Oh, what?
Yes, he was.
KO and I, yeah.
2011, out of USC, he screamed at us a lot.
So very similar.
Not as intense, but his voice just rises like without notice. Yes. He'll just be talking about something, and then he'll just start screaming about it, and you're not really sure when that's going to happen, and it kind of takes you off guard. But it makes him very entertaining to watch as well.
Yes, that's a really good way to put it.
That's awesome.
Started slow, like started like a rational human being, and I think he just doesn't have that like that governor on his excitement level that's like, hey Steve, maybe you should ratchet it down like half a notch.
Right.
I think instead he has like a multiplier that's like, Steve, you're about to get excited, go for broke, multiply this thing times 10 and let's get it. But obviously he's like hyper successful for the man.
I feel like he probably used to have that stop, and then he made $20 billion and said, fuck that stop. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want right now.
Yeah, if Bill Gates kind of gives you the keys to his car, you're probably pretty confident in whatever the fuck you choose to do from there on out, I would say.
But it was crazy to see. He's just like super excited. And one of the best part, actually, of you have to watch a bit of the video to get this, but the best part of the, they did a fan fest where Ballmer introduced himself to all the Clippers fans and had some players on the stage, and watching these players like stifle their laughter during some of his just crazy, like rambling, screaming moments is quite entertaining. You just see like, they don't know really what to say because clearly they're happy that Donald Sterling isn't the owner anymore, but they're just like, we have to tolerate this guy now. Like, it's better. We're in a better situation, but now we have to like agree with this guy and just like let him scream at people and like be super excited all the time. So it's going to be, I feel like he's going to be, he has the potential to be like a Mark Cuban on steroids. And so I'm hoping we get a good Cuban Ballmer showdown sometime during the season when they're both just yelling at each other from like behind each other's benches.
Oh my God. That would be the best.
That's the dream scenario. That's the dream right now.
I think it will happen.
It definitely has a higher chance of happening than a lot of other things. Yeah. But he's going to be a good owner. He's going to throw he's probably going to lose a shit ton of money, but he'll throw a bunch of money at the Clippers. And it's like, he has enough. He doesn't need to make any more. So it's good. It's good for the league. And as a Lakers fan, I'm a little saddened that the Lakers don't have like the absolute monopoly on just like competence. And so it's going to be a little tougher now. It's going to be a little tougher.
Honestly, the fact that he spent $2 billion kind of, yeah, he's going to lose a lot of money, KO.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to close with something on a little bit of a damper note. This is something that we did when Philip Seymour Hoffman passed, and kind of something we do when, you know, people that have been prominent in the pop culture, you know, have their time come to an end. And we're just going to go real quick and give our favorite Robin Williams scene or performance. And I guess, KO, you want to start us off?
You know, it's not your fault, Christian.
Oh.
It's not your fault.
That is.
That is my favorite Robin Williams scene. Good Will Hunting is not really a Robin Williams movie, I wouldn't say, but he has such an incredible supporting role in that film that's one of my favorite ones. It's like something that it's not necessarily the most fun I've ever had watching Robin Williams or anything, but it's kind of bled into my mind and really sits there as something that kind of you can't get rid of. And so I have to say that Good Will Hunting and him and Matt Damon really, really does it for me.
That moment. Yeah. The other moment in that movie when he like grabs him and he's like, I will fucking end you.
I will fucking end you, Chief.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's like, it's real. It's just, you feel everything about it. Totally.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And also reading a little bit about his life and kind of his work after he had passed. There was some comments about how like there's a few scenes in Good Will Hunting where he just completely ad-libs, and they show a scene where he's telling a joke about his wife farting, and apparently it was an entirely ad-libbed thing that they did in the middle of the shot, and you can actually see the camera shakes a bunch for like 2 or 3 seconds because the cameraman was laughing so hard he couldn't keep the camera straight because it was like just something he totally pulled out of his ass in like a really serious scene. And so it's just kind of impressive the range that he had as a performer.
Totally. D-Rock.
Well, that was a really good segue because that's actually the scene I was going to talk about. The scene where he talks about his wife farting is a scene about how we grow to love the little foibles the people we love tend to have, and how we grow to love those things about those people. And that monologue has always just kind of stuck with me. As I've grown up, I've always kind of come back to that speech and seen how true it is. And it is kind of special just to hear that was a very ad-libbed scene, because it is a very true scene. And it's nice to hear there is some truth behind it from probably personal experiences of Robin Williams. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, totally, totally agree.
What about you, Christian? You got a favorite?
Yeah, I think so. It's actually like a similar thing. And it's like the first time I saw Dead Poets Society. I know it's like, you know, it's kind of campy now as like an adult, but as like a 15 or 16 year old seeing that, it hits like a really good chord. And it was also, you know, the very first time I'd ever seen Robin Williams in like any sort of a serious role.
Yeah,
or a wholly serious role, and it definitely stuck with me. The Good Will Hunting thing's huge, but I think one of the big things that kind of blew my mind is like the viewership of Mork and Mindy. That was like one of the things that popped up. And I want to say it was something like 30 or 40, maybe even 50 million people a week were watching this show.
Wow.
Damn.
And it was just, it never hit me that he was that big of a star.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's kind of before, I guess.
It's like before our time.
We would be pop culture knowledgeable.
Totally.
I didn't really know that was that big of it. That's surprising to me. Millions, like tens of millions like that. That is crazy.
Yeah. But the other one that I always remember, and it's like, it's just because it was, you know, one of X number of movies that we had as a kid and watched a lot of movies growing up, was Flubber. Like, I'll never forget his, like, I always kind of associate him with Flubber. And then the other one is this movie called Jack.
Yeah.
He plays, like, the kid who ages super early. And the scene that I kept remembering is the one where Jack goes into the gas station to buy, like, you know, like a nudie mag or something like that. And I remember being a kid and being like, wow, like he's acting so good as a kid, but he's a grown man.
Right.
And that always stuck with me. And then the last thing is that I recently watched Hook as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's on Netflix.
Which is pretty solid one. But, I mean, it's obviously the Goodwill Hunting one is kind of the one that I'll always go right back to, but
I think that's very much a generational movie too, for people in our like bracket possibly. That's like something that everybody's seen and multiple times. You know, it's always on cable and stuff, and so it really hits home in terms of remembering. And also, we haven't given a shout out, but Jumanji, producer of one of my favorite memes.
Wow!
What year is this?
What year is it? I love that one. But Jumanji gets some big ups in my book too.
Agreed. So, you know, thoughts and prayers to his loved ones. And as always, if you're thinking about things that you'd like to talk to somebody about, just go on the internet, find resources, talk to somebody. There's people out there. Yeah. This has been Keeping It Brief. Thank you, as always, to Laura Peterson for our intro.
And thank you to Matt Grabish for putting together our fancy logo.
KO? Derek, great to have you guys back.
Yeah, good to be back, man. Yeah. We gotta keep this going a little bit here.
Yes, sir.
Good to get the band back together here.
The band's getting back together. You know what we're doing? We're on streaking!